Welcome to another installment of the House of Pop Culture. My name is Anthony Donovan.
I'm Amy Meredith.
Durwood Murray.
And Joe Reese.
And for the next hour or so, we're going to be talking your face off about any and all things pop culture related. Now, today is a very special episode because we have our first guest podcaster with us.
Oh, dun da da da.
Who is it? I can't see them.
Dear friend of us and this show, and also a published author, one of the contributing authors, in fact, of the book Filled with Glee, which is the Glee Season 1 episode companion, the fabulous Miss Amy Berner.
Yay!
Hello!
Amy.
Anytime we get extra Amys on this show, I'm always happy.
We have upped our Amy count.
It's so lovely.
How you doing?
I'm fabulous. Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we get started on, you know, one of the main things you're here to talk about, tell us about Filled with Glee and the other projects that you're doing, because you're just everywhere.
Yay!
Well, I write for Smart Pop Books, and that was a book came out last year about the fabulous first season of Glee. Second season, not quite as fabulous, but I still love it. My next book is actually, I contributed to Fringe Science, which is a book about
Fringe
is fantastic. And so it's science fiction writers and scientists and me writing about the different science topics that come up in Fringe. I've actually written for 9 different Smart Pop titles, plus I co-wrote the book The Great Snape Debate. So I like to write. It's a thing.
Where could one find these books?
You can find them at smartpopbooks.com. Any of the 9 titles about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Angel, Veronica Mars, really whatever you're into, there's probably a book on that.
Okay, awesome. So you're very well-versed in pop culture.
It's kind of my thing.
And another thing that you're superbly well-versed in, because I don't know if you've been living under a rock, but last weekend, we're based, for those that don't know, out of San Diego, and once a year our entire city gets taken over for one glorious weekend, which is, of course, Comic-Con.
Now,
Christmas in July.
Amy Meredith and Durwood and I are not Comic-Con attendees regularly. However, we have 2 veterans here, Joe and Miss Berner, who are going to be telling us the highlights of this year. So guys, I'm going to turn it over to you. What was it all about this year?
Pop culture stuff.
Really?
Shockingly.
Wow.
You don't say.
I thought it was going to be a Civil War reenactment.
Well, that probably happened at different times. No, that was last year when the guy got stabbed in the eye.
Well, that's true. But what were, you know, what'd you guys do?
Well, the big thing seemed to be this year, television. Yeah. Hall H was, there were people there. It was crowded sometimes. Twilight, that sort of thing.
Actually, Twilight wasn't that bad.
I heard it wasn't that bad.
Sadly, I walked right into it.
I'm so sorry.
You stepped in Twilight.
I had gone to a different panel, and it was at the same time, and I figured there would be a huge line, and I ended up getting there, and at noon, I just walked in, it was the end, I'm like, son of a bitch, I've been in both Twilight panels the time they've been there.
Once you stepped in Twilight, it is really hard to get that shit off your shoes. I'm just going to tell you right now.
You threw your panties at our pats, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, Joe, was Rob Pattinson as dreamy as you thought he would be?
He had some weird, funky haircut going on, probably for some movie they said, but I just think he was like, fuck y'all. And, you know, Kristen Stewart was ever so twitchy as normal. Like, I don't think she's ever shaken her Joan Jett impression of, doing drugs and shit. So I think, yeah.
I have to admit, that's why one pop culture, I don't consider it a failing. I have neither seen nor read anything Twilight.
Stay clean.
I'm kind of proud of this.
You're
stay golden.
You know, I have an alcoholic drink that goes along with it. Come join us. Join us in the drink. Drink the Kool-Aid.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I keep hearing, because, you know, all my friends go to Comic-Con, so I hear about it constantly. One thing that I kept hearing about, to go back to what you were talking, is the Fringe panel. Apparently, that was supposed to be out of this world.
Because Fringe is awesome.
The Fringe panel was epic, is the best word I can come up with. They came up with some things they filmed directly for Comic-Con. If you're familiar with the show, one of the main characters no longer exists in the show. They have erased him from the entire...
It blew my mind.
It was incredible.
The season finale was... Yeah, it blew my mind.
So when they created the wrap-up of, here's the story so far, there was no sign of this character, Peter. You never saw him. Not any of the shots.
That's cool.
And then they had auditions for the role of Peter, and they had amazing people auditioning for the role. They had Michael Emerson from Lost. They had Damon Lindelof. They had Greg Grunberg. They had just all these people. Some people I didn't even know were auditioning for this role. And then at the end, you see Joshua Jackson dressed as one of the observers. Which blew my mind.
That's crazy.
And he actually appeared on the panel a bit late, dressed as an observer, which then blew my mind even more. That was absolutely one of the best panels of all of Comic-Con for me. And I saw just about every television panel I possibly could. Ballroom 20 was a madhouse, which is where I lived for most of Con. Yeah. I was lucky enough to get in because I got there very, very, very early. And it was just some amazing panels going on in there.
Now, I have a question because I know Lost used to do a lot of things like that too. Was it always this much of a show? Because half of it is kind of like a panel and the other half is kind of like a show.
A lot of the different things, especially the ones that really know their group and know the audience, they will bring out all the stops. Lost used to do it all the time. Favreau does it all the time when he came. Like, the first time when he brought first Iron Man, they jokingly said that he was, you know, at the editing bay and they showed a video. And like, I'll show you. The first trailer hadn't even come out for Iron Man. And so he's like, oh, here, I'll show you a little stuff I've been working on. He clicks on his computer, and then comes up the old Iron Man TV cartoon sort of thing. And then he comes out with a video camera, and then they show the first, like, long extended trailer. And so they do stuff like that, and Lost was probably one of the big ones.
I think shows that really embrace fandom and pop culture are the ones that do it. Mm-hmm. One of them that has done it in past years did not this year, although it was still a fun panel, was Supernatural. They embrace mm-hmm. fandom. They have jokes about fan fiction, about they break the fourth wall.
And that's really been around a long time.
Yeah, they're going into their seventh season. Yeah. Exactly.
Supernatural's still on the air?
Yeah. Still on the air.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying. It's been 7 seasons. It has a big following.
And the other one, which was actually my personal favorite panel of the entire convention, just because I love the show, it not so much for it being as brilliant as Chuck, although really as Fringe, it's Chuck. I love Chuck. It's a comedy, but it embraces pop culture perfectly. It embraces Comic-Con, and every year they do something, some sort of special thing. They either have a musical performance, they have a special film.
Wow.
This year it was a 80s training montage done to Eye of the Tiger, sung by Jester.
Nice.
And that's a show that really kind of had its birth at Comic-Con. They showed the pilot. I was there. It got a standing ovation when they first showed it. I've been to every Chuck panel the entire time. Huh. And this last panel, they were really thanking the fans. And the lead of the show, Zachary Levi, actually choked up a bit, which choked me up a little bit. Mm. And it was a wonderful moment for Con. That's probably one of my top moments of Con this year.
Somebody who's always really popular at Con is Nathan Fillion, because he's been in so many different things. Yeah. Do they have a castle? Does Castle have one?
Castle had a panel.
I would think that they would, because he has such a geek draw that they would try to capitalize on that.
Because he is the hammer.
Yeah, he was actually there in costume for most of Con. A lot of people didn't recognize him. He did have a panel. There was a Castle panel. It was on Sunday morning opposite all that was going on in Hall H, which was Glee, Supernatural, and what most people were there to see, Doctor Who, which was an incredible panel.
Huh.
And they had the stars of Doctor Who. They flew them in from England. It was just an incredible, incredible day.
New television, what was good?
The ones I saw the panel for Ringer, which is the new Sarah Michelle Gellar show.
A lot of buzz about that show, coming back to TV.
Yeah, that really, it shows promise. It's a noir show. It's a lot of mystery. I really liked the clips that they saw. Unfortunately, they did not screen the entire pilot. Mm. Also, like their swag. They gave away little camp stools. So I had somewhere to sit in line. So they
a lot of places. Well, they used to, give out so much free stuff. And like this year, especially Hall H, very lackluster. The only thing I have was for the Twix panel, which is the new Francis Ford Coppola movie, and he was there, and it was because it involves Edgar Allan Poe to a degree, and they actually had these Edgar Allan Poe masks that were actually 3D glasses.
Oh,
and nice. Because a lot of the stuff that they show, especially in Hall H, it's like, well, stuff's being done in 3D, so they hand out 3D glasses.
Right.
So this is kind of the way of doing that. And it was also referenced, in a way, Apocalypse Now, because when that came out in the theaters, there were no credits at all when it was showed in theaters.
Yeah.
And they handed out programs. And on the back of the mask, it was kind of like a little program of the movie, which looks kind of weird. It has Val Kilmer as a writer, and he goes to this town, and he ends up, there's some stuff that goes on. He has some weird dreams and involving Edgar Allan Poe, and there's a murder, and it's hard to under
so it's a musical.
Yes. But what Coppola was doing is he was harking back, because I think his grandfather, his great grandfather, used to be a conductor, for like the symphony, and how back before recorded entertainment, you know, as our, you would tour with your stuff, and that's the only way people could hear it, and it would change based on the audience, and they're working with stuff in order, and he wants to do a tour of the movie before it gets released, and go to, and with different audiences, and have it all set up that he can then
edit the movie.
He can be adjusting the movie based on the audience.
Wow.
What was funny, like, the concept is very interesting, but it was a very, very dress rehearsal, because they were having many issues, and I was sitting next to our friend Mitch, and he was all like, old people and technology. I mean, I love Coppola. I mean, he did the two Godfathers, yeah. Apocalypse Now, Dracula, and tons of other stuff. But
I think conversely, for the swag and the giveaways, the television studios went all out. I mean, in Ballroom 20, we were getting books and bags and the aforementioned stool and the screen protectors and all these things. The television studios are really promoting, I think, much more than the movies are. I heard The Falling Skies, a panel I unfortunately did not get into, gave away hoodies.
I love that show, too. I think that's a really good show. I've gotten into it this summer.
I think what's the most important question to be asked here, I'll go ahead and ask it. What did either two of you bring for me as far as the free swag goes? What did you get me?
I in honor of last year's Comic-Con, I got you a pen in the eye.
No.
Oh!
Here, Derwin, have a pin.
Oh! Werner gave me a button.
What's it say?
What is it?
It's from Fringe. And
I was going to say, this isn't a visual medium.
There's a cow, and you can see its insides like it's being x-rayed.
That's nice.
I've never seen Fringe, so I don't get the significance. Well, but it's cool, because Werner gave it to me.
I have a question. Yay. Now you've been at Comic-Con for more than 20 years, Amy. And how has it changed from then to now? Because, you know, because like Comic-Con, you think comic books. And I remember Joe telling me this past weekend that the movies were really underrepresented and TV came to the front. How was it back in the day?
Yeah, what was it like if you've been at Con for 20 years? What was it like going your first time at 2 years old?
Well, my first year going was 1990. And living here in San Diego, there were some science fiction, but it wasn't the huge pop culture mecca that it is now. I happened to wear a Doctor Who t-shirt because I've been obsessed with the show since I was 10 years old. And that's the first time going to Comic-Con that I felt like I was among my people. They knew what it was. They knew what the TARDIS was, and that made me very happy.
Unlike the cast of Big Bang Theory.
Exactly.
I didn't know what it was until Pocket said she wanted a birthday cake like that.
They're actors. They're just actors.
So I still feel like it's my people. I love going. I love the atmosphere. I love making new friends. It's just a wonderful time. However, it is much bigger. I think that the exposure that websites have given, like Entertainment Weekly, TV Guide, all these different websites, all these different news outlets have given, have raised the profile. Mm-hmm. I think this is good for pop culture in general, because instead of being an underground thing, it's mainstream. And so it really does advance pop culture, which is wonderful. However, it's become a different experience in many ways. It's not the go to whatever you want, whenever you want. I used to go over to the gaming rooms and played whatever new board game came out. Or I would go to some small room and hear some amazing speaker. Now it's you stay in one room and you see what's in there if you want to see anything good. And you get there before 8 a.m. Which, you know, you give and you take. You have these amazing presentations where there might be one or two in past years. All day, it's incredible.
And they're all competing.
It's
like a network schedule.
I would have loved to have gotten into Castle. I would have loved to have gone to Falling Skies. There are a lot of things I would have loved to have seen. I had to choose.
Yeah, and one thing you were saying kind of about, you know, it's good for, you know, geek and pop culture where, you know, it's bringing a lot of attention. And that was kind of something that people were bringing up in the first panel I went to. It was, oh, you sexy geek, and it was...
thank you.
It was a panel of all these geeky type women that were, you know, talking about and kind of talking about women in pop culture, and then also kind of like, are there, like, the first question that led off was kind of about talking about how, you know, are there fake geeks out there? Because being a geek has become popular, are there people that are kind of just faking the funk and, you know, well, in more ways than one, if you're, you know, good.
That's the other thing
you bring the funk in a different way. But, you know, and kind of not necessarily really knowing it, because something that I know most conventions are really known for are booth girls and women that are just hired.
Promo whores.
Yeah, basically. And had no idea, which most, you know, most things people will be like, whatever, cool, you got nice tits here, give me something. Whereas at Comic-Con, there's that, but then they're going to be like, hey, did you get the new expansion pack on this game? And they're like, uh-huh. You know, and because, well, some of the people that were on that panel, it was moderated by Katrina Hill, who is on Twitter and stuff, the action chick. She's the one that was doing the Adam West Get a Star on the Walk of Fame campaign, and that's how I got to know her. But it had some other people, Bonnie Burton, who does stuff with Lucasfilm, who is hilarious. Amy and Anthony, right? Adrian Curry.
Oh, yeah.
She was on there. She was actually dressed as Lilu from Fifth Element.
Nice.
Very, very uncomfortable costume, she was saying.
Adrian Curry, is she the one who married Chris Brady?
And she's getting divorced, and she's
Okay. Yeah, she was the first winner of Top Model.
Claire Grant, who's part of Team Unicorn, that did the Geek Girls and Gamer Girls, that was the parody of California Girls by Katy Perry.
Yeah.
She's also married to Seth Green.
Okay.
Who was also there and ended up interjecting at some point. Then,
never a bad thing.
Yeah.
Well, I think Geek Girls, Seth Green.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Great woman, the Nerdy Bird. She does a lot of blogging and stuff like that. And then what was that? Claire Kramer. She didn't talk much, but she was on Buffy.
Yeah, I remember her. She's Glory.
Then Kyle, my writing sucks. I actually took notes.
I didn't
want
to have to say it, but yes,
it
does.
13 years ago in Comic Con.
Joe, you should have been a doctor.
Notes.
Look at that stuff.
You know what?
I have to deal
with my younger brother being a doctor and hearing, you know, why can't you be a doctor? Even though no one ever said that
was
to
my
me,
bad,
but,
Joe.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Was one of your parents a rare bird?
Yes.
Be a doctor.
Be a doctor.
Kyla Cassidy, who works at Nerdist.com, and Seth Green gave her crap for not having her on the Nerdist podcast. And then there was Jennifer Stuller, who's putting together this Geek Girl Con in October up in the Northwest somewhere. But there was a lot of really interesting stuff, and then how more or less a lot of people talking about, you know, a lot of like the deals were with, you know, kind of fake game, you know, fake geek girls, and they come and more girl on girl hate sort of thing is where a lot of it comes from. And also, you know, where a lot of the costumes that people are cosplaying are very revealing.
Yeah. Right.
And, but then, you know, they're talking about, you know, is it empowering or is it just, you know, basically, and then I think Bonnie brought up the fact that, you know, because Slave Leia, how we talked about that previously,
yes,
is actually, you know, she brought up the point that, well, Slave Leia did kill Jabba the Hutt with her bare hands. So it's like, that's
that
pretty
valid then, point.
But she also brought up,
see that movie.
Yeah, she, yeah, shut up. She also brought up, why do people only cosplay as people? Why didn't someone, you know, hey, I really like Spider-Man, why don't I cosplay as the Chrysler
Where's
building?
The Gumby and Pokey cosplay?
Oh, jeez.
That's at a special convention.
I get what they're saying. I do think a lot of the female chick things are a little revealing because a lot of these shows started mainly for guys, and it's slowly starting to filter in more.
And they're all starting, you know, don't necessarily cosplay as what, you know, hey, this I might, you know, this is sexy. It's like cosplay as the characters you want to cosplay as.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they wear. And but also Adrian Curry had one of the funniest parts when she was talking about how people, you know, her friends stuff like, oh my god, I'm so fat, you know, especially when I'm next to you. It's like, do not compare yourself to me. I am a freak of nature.
Yes.
This is not natural how I look. So
it's nice to hear someone say it out loud.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well here's the thing is that, you know, you always hear in the years past of Comic-Con, what in the estimation of both of you do you think is this year's you should have been there moment?
Oh, that would be when CM Punk interrupted one of the panels and said, why isn't Zack Ryder going to be on Monday Night Raw, and then left.
Durwood?
If you watch wrestling, dude, that was awesome.
Durwood?
Sorry.
So, and, yeah, shout out Durwood.
You didn't go to Con.
Okay, but it did actually happen at Con, I'm just saying.
For me, I mean, I had, there was a lot of cool stuff this year, but it seemed fairly underwhelming. I went to a lot of the movie panels, and actually, most notably missing, there was no Warner Brothers panel.
What is that about?
Which,
especially
Warner Brothers...
with Batman.
Well, Warner Brothers
back.
Owns DC, so there was no DC panel. And Disney did not have one, which I believe they're actually trying to get something going at D23, and they want that to be their big thing. But Disney owns Marvel.
Right.
So the two biggest comic book, you know, companies
had
out
no
there
presence at
had... Con. Well, they had booths and stuff, but they had no panels.
Yeah.
But, I guess what was cool, but I mean, outright, but they did show some stuff for Amazing Spider-Man, which looked kind of cool. They showed the trailer that just came out, but they showed it 3D.
Yeah, I still don't get that, but I saw the trailer for it. It looks exactly like the Tobey Maguire movie.
I think they officially announced, I don't think they had actually officially announced that the Lizard's going to be the villain, and they had some footage of it that looked kind of cool, but the best part of that was because Reese Ifans is playing Dr. Connors, and who's the Lizard. And when he came out a little bit late. I even tweeted during that moment. I'm like, Reese Ifans looks loaded. Turns out he was. Because we didn't read. He got arrested at Comic-Con because he was drunk and ended up assaulting someone backstage.
Nice.
Like you do.
Amy?
For me, well, in the past few years, there's been something outside of con that has been my number one thing. And that's one great thing that about... how Comic-Con has grown, is that there's all sorts of outside things you can go to if you're not actually going to Comic-Con. And so last year it was Woodstock, which I attended again this year.
Riff Tracks represent!
Exactly. And then there was the Fellowship the Musical one year, there was the Battlestar Galactica concert one year, there have been some amazing things. This year, there was nothing outside of con that really grabbed me as good as Woodstock was, because it was. But there were moments in con that were fabulous, not one that rose above the rest. The pilots of Terra Nova and Alcatraz, which were the strongest pilots I saw. I thought they both were...
very interested to see both of those, especially
of those.
Terra Nova.
Terra Nova, I think, was actually the best pilot I saw all of con.
Really?
I was very impressed, more so than I thought I would be.
Oh, they've really sunk some money into that show.
Oh, definitely they have. The aforementioned Chuck panel and the Fringe panel and Doctor Who panel were great. But the TV Guide Fan Favorites panel had so many people on it from so many different shows. I think that was, if you had to be at one panel, that was it. They had clips from many shows. They had many stars. It was fun. And it was them just reveling in how fans react to them and how much they enjoy being at con and the give and take and talking a little bit about their shows and what's coming up and what their experiences have been. So that was probably, if you had to be at one panel, that was it.
I do have to say, though, I'm now just remembering, probably my favorite moment out of all of con and any of the panels was during one of the worst panels I've ever been to. It was during the Dorothy of Oz panel, and it was Patrick Stewart's first Comic-Con ever.
Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yes, Sir Patrick Stewart.
Which is amazing that that was his first Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's his first, and you know, he's doing voiceover for, you know, this animated Oz movie. And the only other voice talent that was there was Megan Hilty, who had played Glinda on both Broadway and in L.A. for in Wicked. Uh-huh. And she, right before they go to questions, she said, "Oh, I just have something to interject. A couple days ago, it was Patrick Stewart's birthday, so all of Hall H got to sing Happy Birthday to Sir Patrick Stewart. So that was kind of, however." The rest of that panel sucked donkey nuts.
I suspect that Megan knew that, and she's like, you know what, let me just get everybody in a good mood right now.
Yeah, so a guy offered to, the first question, he's like, oh my god, Patrick Stewart, you're so amazing. Will you have butt sex? And then they cut off the mic. And it was all like, really?
Whoa.
You're going to offer? No! Sir Patrick Stewart! No, don't offer that. But also, because... The voice cast in this movie, it's Lea Michele, Patrick Stewart, Megan Hilty, Martin Short, Kelsey Grammer, Oliver Platt, Jim Belushi, Dan Aykroyd.
Oh, Jim Belushi!
And
how does he keep doing this?
Wait, it gets worse. So, music done by Brian Adams. So I'm sitting next to a guy dressed as a Jedi. But both times,
I think that is one of the greatest comments
I've ever been able to say, just a matter-of-factly. No. I'm just sitting next to a Jedi.
He has no rights to say anything, but whatever.
Anyways, as I'm sitting there, both times they mentioned Jim Belushi and Brian Adams that first time, he kind of, like, this guy's maybe in his 40s, easy. And he's, like, bouncing up and down like a giddy schoolgirl. I'm like, really? Those two people? Then, worse than the offering to be sexually pleasured by Sir Patrick Stewart was some maybe 18, 19-year-old kid, and was like, so, I have a question for you. What was it like to work with the comedic genius? And at that point, I thought, oh, dear God, don't kid. Please do not. I might have to come over there and beat the crap out of you. He's like, the comedic genius of Jim Belushi.
Oh.
And I was like, what? Like, seriously? Yeah.
Damn. Wait, did Jim Belushi ask that question?
No. Shockingly.
Did Jim Belushi pay him to ask that question?
I don't know that answer. He didn't ask it, but he might have paid. But that was my little rant on.
I had a worst moment myself. I was in the Family Guy panel, which is always fun. I don't watch it religiously, but I do watch it. And pretty much whatever they make fun of, I'm good with. But before they introduced Seth MacFarlane, they had two of the writers out there. And this is a few hours after Amy Winehouse died. And they made an Amy Winehouse joke.
Too soon.
And Seth MacFarlane came out. I was like, really, guys? Really? Which I appreciated. That was probably my low point of comedy.
Yeah, it's
like,
you usually give a few...
Give us a day at least.
Not a couple of hours.
And actually, that's a nice segue. Because we are gonna talk about the Primetime Emmy nominations. But I do want to briefly touch on the fact that on Saturday... Amy Winehouse did pass away. She was 27 years old. And
same age as Janis Joplin.
Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain.
John Belushi?
No, wait.
No, he was 33.
We said Hendrix.
Janis.
Oh, God.
Mama Cass, was she 27?
No. Morrison.
Yeah.
And also Brian Jones, one of the founders of the Rolling Stones.
And here's the thing. Because... I did not expect the internet to be as ablaze as it was.
Really?
And I was really... Well, here... Because I was shocked at... Not that it happened, but I was shocked at the reactions.
I wasn't shocked at the reactions.
I was shocked that there was this class... Because here's the thing. You knew the jokes were going to come in. They write themselves. And for me, personally, the only truly offensive thing is unfunny. Unfunny is offensive to me.
Yeah.
You want to make 101 jokes about Amy Winehouse dead hours after, that's fine. At least make it funny. Because if it's not funny and it's just a grab to get that attention and to be the first one over that, that's stupid.
Yeah.
There was one joke I read on Twitter that made me laugh. I'm going to share it with you now. Amy Winehouse dead at 27. I want to be the first to send my condolences to her dealer.
That's a good joke.
Now see, that's funny.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it was a bunch of weak sauce. But it seemed to be this school of people, like there were the fans, and I count myself among them,
who were very upset.
Me too. Yeah.
And because you see the tragedy of it, she's 27 years old, her life hadn't started yet.
Yeah.
What made it even sadder is we knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Russell Brand wrote a beautiful eulogy to her on his blog yesterday.
He's such a jackass.
He is, and I don't like him, but I loved what he wrote because he said
he has some moments.
Having been through addiction himself, he's like, you know, in the life of an addict, when you love an addict, you wait for that phone call, and that phone call is either going to be the person saying they want to turn their life around, they want to get help, or you find out they're dead. And then there was the other school of people who seemed to be. They seem to almost have this attitude that because she was rich and famous, she deserved to die. Because, you know, she had all that money, she had all those resources, she chose not to do it, she chose to be an addict, she chose to kill herself, and it was kind of weird for me.
I remember, I think I was actually talking to someone about this just a couple weeks ago with her, where, you know, I remember, you know, during the height of, you know, her, when she was out, people were, you know, saying, oh my God, she does so many drugs, you know, such a bad influence. Yet, put Keith Richards up on this pedestal.
Yep.
Keith Richards probably did more drugs in one, like, weekend than Amy Winehouse ever did.
True.
Yeah. And, you know, now we hold, you know, it's like, oh my God. And it's just
because he survived.
Yeah, it's like, I'm pretty sure, yeah, he's been dead for quite a few years and he's just being fueled by the, you know, the drugs.
I don't like the people who are like, oh, there are worse things happening in the world, you know, who cares?
Right.
why do we care? The other people die every day. Yes, people die every single day, but I liked her music. I didn't know her personally. I don't know if I would have liked her personally, but I liked her music. She brought a little happiness into my day every once in a while when one of her songs came on. Therefore, it touches me when she died.
Which is odd, considering she made the greatest breakup album ever.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. Yeah, but her song, Amy, 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 I want that song to follow me around everywhere I go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I know one of the, a big thing that I hear, I've heard some people, you know, complaining about is that she is now part of what is, you know, referred to as the 27 Club.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, those people, those five, and I was actually looking at it online today on, you know, that ever trustworthy source that is Wikipedia. And they actually had, you know, the 20, you know, I looked up 27 Club and it came up and it had Brian Jones, Hendrix, Joplin, Morrison, and Cobain as the top. And then it had, you know, and it had pictures of them. And then it had a list of other, like, artists and musicians that had died at the age of 27, because apparently that's a common thing. But they weren't, and she was down in, and then it was in chronological after those five. So she was the last one on that list, but she wasn't part of, you know,
the
those,
major
those five, which I think, and I do agree with, mainly because I mean, when I think what made the 27 Club so popular, for lack of a better
that,
phrasing.
That's just like the worst.
Yeah, for the worst phrasing I could have gone. But is because Morrison, Joplin, and Hendrix all died within like a year and a half of each other.
Right.
At the height of their, you know, their careers. And they were so, like, innovative and influential.
And they really put the music out, too. Yeah. That's the other thing. They had huge catalogs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, Joplin probably was on her, like, fifth album. Hendrix was on its fifth album. Both of them were on, like, their third band. And, you know, Morrison, I mean, The Doors probably had, I think, about 10 albums.
Yeah, like, they had huge catalogs.
You know, I think the big difference between, you know, those first five, you know, Brian Jones being, you know, with the Stones and then Cobain, is that they were very much innovators, and, you know, people really, you know, they influence so many people. Now, Amy Winehouse, I love her music, but I don't view her as this innovator. I just view her as a great musician and performer and artist, but not necessarily an innovator.
Time will tell.
But true.
I think because, you know, the three of them were very popular when they died. Death does a funny thing to a career.
Yeah.
And when you become legend.
Well, because I've always had an issue with Kurt Cobain being in that.
Well, yes.
Because I'm not a fan of Nirvana.
But
never
he's of our generation.
But here's the thing. If he hadn't committed suicide, he would just be another Eddie Vedder. He would just be another Stone Temple Pilots.
I don't think he'd be that good. But
that's my point. I don't think he would be at this status that everyone gives him now if he hadn't committed suicide. I don't think it would have held.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of people that's, and that's, I mean, I'm very curious to see, you know, it's, we can always just sit here, it's like, would Morrison or would Joplin or would Hendrix have reached the status? I mean, right now, everyone, most people are, you know, it's universally agreed that, you know, like, Hendrix is, like, the best guitarist ever. But the thing is, you almost can never take that away from him now, because it's almost like it's set in stone.
Right.
Whereas amazing guitarists like, you know, Jimmy Page and
Prince.
Van Halen, Prince.
Carlos Santana.
Yeah, Carlos Santana. These amazing guitarists.
Taylor
Jack
Swift.
White. Yes, did Taylor you just... Swift. Yes, she is a
get
phenomenal.
Out. That's it. You get
when,
out.
When she
kidding.
Lit her guitar on
Dude,
fire and I'm played it behind her head.
Taylor Swift can shred.
You go
but
with it.
I'm sure she makes excellent coleslaw, if that's what you mean by that.
Coming soon to Stranger Things. Taylor Swift is coleslaw.
If she'd just take half her mascara budget and put it towards guitar lessons, we wouldn't be suffering like this.
She writes her own songs. How could you?
Wait, does she really?
No, seriously, yeah. She does.
She does.
How do you know that?
Because I pay attention to
That's
TV.
When he's wanking to the pictures of her and it has the bio next
but
to her.
But anyway,
dude,
if
she...
we can...
doesn't have
I just
want to
put it like this. Amy Winehouse was tremendous fun to make fun of, because let's face it, she was ridiculous, and she, you know, and
she had crows in
her
hair.
Her problems in life were not only permitted, they were celebrated. I mean, her biggest hit is Rehab.
Yeah.
And, you know, for one of those things where it's sad, we all knew it was coming. I'm personally, for me, it always gets back to the music. For me, it always gets back to the music.
Yeah.
And I consider her a great loss, because I love both of her albums.
Well, I think I think that's also the other thing, too, is, you know, nowadays, that drugged out, strung out rock star is, all right, whatever. That's not new. Whereas, and you know, with media nowadays, everyone is, you know, every part of a celebrity's life is scrutinized and in the public's eyes. Whereas back then, it's like, no one was like, oh my God, they're going to, you know, do drugs till they die, you know, in 5 months or
the difference really was is that now we're in an instant society.
Right.
You do shit now, someone catches it on a cell phone, it's on the internet 5 seconds later, it's out there. Whereas the time of Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and
it took at least 20 minutes to get on the internet.
Exactly. It didn't come out like that.
Dial up.
Yes. Dial up. That's what happened.
Okay. So, yeah. That's our thoughts on Amy Winehouse. So,
I will miss her.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Amy Winehouse. We will miss you.
We
but
like you.
On to happier topics. Really? The primetime Emmy nominations Woo-hoo! Have come out. Before we even get started, can I please get a hell yeah and hallelujah Cat fucking Dealey.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
It's about time.
Oh my gosh. You know what?
Agreed.
Shame on you, Academy, for waiting so long. And if she does not win that thing, I'm going to be so upset.
Well, who's she up
so
against?
She's so delightful.
She up against, like, what, Probst? And
I think she's the only girl in the
Amazing
category.
Race.
Yeah, she replaced Klum as the only woman.
Well, she's hotter than Klum, so I'll give it to her.
Plus,
yeah.
Klum didn't really do much for Project Runway. I know she's a producer and all,
yeah.
But she just said the same things every week. Kat Dealey, fabulous.
And
yeah,
she gets
runs that show.
She runs that show.
Yes.
She cuts the judges off. She gets that show on
yep.
and off on time.
And she's such a lovely person.
And
she is.
She's delightful.
She's
yes.
adorable. We all love Kat Dealey
yes.
a lot. You just
well,
need to understand
it's not
that.
Like that. You see other shows like American Idol and things like that. People get booted and, you know, Ryan's like, oh, poor you. These dancers cling to Kat Dealey. And
yeah.
she comforts
She plays
them.
The mother figure.
And wipes their little tears.
Like, you know none of the Idol kids are allowed to touch Seacrest.
Yeah.
No.
But she takes care of those kids. And you can tell how much they like her. Especially like when the All-Stars come back. They know
Doesn't
her.
Doesn't she have a barbecue every year?
Every 4th of July she throws a barbecue and she brings all of the contestants
oh,
in.
Like
once again, this is
like
a British check.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nothing like a 4th of July barbecue being hosted by a Brit.
Yeah.
Dude, we gotta get invites to that barbecue.
Seriously, right?
We gotta all find
right.
a way.
So, what do we got?
Let's start with, we're gonna do picks later on. We actually get closer to the actual Emmys. Get over it, Derwood.
You know what? I'm shouting them picks as you announce nominees.
Do whatever.
Deal.
Be you.
Hey, ladies,
I will turn
ladies,
the studio
ladies,
around.
You're both pretty.
Well, let's start with the big ones. Outstanding drama series. We had Boardwalk Empire, which Anthony and I are big fans of.
I dig
Me.
It. And
did
I am too.
It?
Yeah.
I think this
I
podcast
think you're at my
as
house
a whole.
A few times watching it.
Really?
I think Burner may be the only one that hasn't seen Boardwalk Empire.
Unfortunately, not. Not for not wanting to. I do. I just haven't quite gotten to that one
I
yet.
You know,
it.
I've got HBO on demand at my place if you want to come over sometime and
I
watch Boardwalk Empire.
You
just,
might not be wearing
look,
pants.
I may or may not be wearing pants at the time you come over. I'm just saying,
He's
come at your own risk. But I'm just saying,
either, so.
Boardwalk Empire will be on TV.
I will take that under advisement.
There
Fair
you go.
Enough.
A show I wish that I watched, and I wish I had more time for, Dexter.
My problem. I'm only
we have a fan in the house.
Amy seems
I'm
to
only
be a
in
fan.
The third season.
I love Dexter. It is brilliant. I'm not a gore person. Not my thing. But that show is incredible. This was not its strongest season, and yet I still think it deserves a nomination.
Nice. Okay. I've only heard good things about it.
First two seasons, which all I've seen, are really good.
From what I said, the ones last season with John Lithgow are like. Supposed to be amazing.
Yes, the John Lithgow season was,
that was season
yeah.
four,
brilliant.
Which normally I'm pretty good at forgetting when I hear spoilers from a show that I haven't watched and may end up watching, like Battlestar Galactica. I heard spoilers all
I
left
love
and right.
BSG.
No idea what the heck they were. That's the one show that I had part of it spoiled for me that stuck with me the whole time. But I'm not
don't,
gonna mention
don't say
it. I'm not gonna I'm not gonna be a dick.
One that's been a fan favorite for a while
people.
And I was really surprised to see it on the list was Friday Night Lights. Because
it's
not,
still on?
Here's
no,
the,
last season. Last
but
season.
Here's the thing, it's not even on like an actual
well,
network.
Well, it's on DirecTV has been
yeah.
because it got kind of, NBC didn't pick it up, no one picked it up, but DirecTV did, and so they would broadcast it at one point, and now, and what's over the last few seasons, NBC has actually been airing it over the summer.
Right.
Huh.
As kind of a, well, it's already aired on DirecTV, so it's almost like they didn't have to really pay for any of it. They just had the rights to broadcast
yeah.
it over the summer, so in that way it's...
I have not seen Friday Night Lights, but my friends at Smart Pop swear by it. They love it. This... They've been trying to get me to watch it, so I need to see it. It's probably the next one on my list.
I hated the movie, so I can't watch the TV show.
I understand it's nothing like the movie. I'm a big fan of the website Television Without Pity, and they adore show.
It's kind of what the movie really wanted, dealing with high school football and all that, and
I was thinking Mystery Alaska. Sorry.
No, football, not hockey.
Football.
Yeah, and so, but then it kind of deals with all that and, all the drama that's related in an area where football is God.
It's everything.
One of my favorite new shows of the season, Games of Thrones.
Brilliant.
I think that's a brilliant show. I haven't read the books, but everyone that I know that's read the books loves it. I love the show. I think the show is amazing. You don't have to read the books to watch the show. The Good Wife, which I have never seen.
I don't understand why the Academy has such a boner for that show.
I'm going to have to watch it to figure it out, I guess.
Right. Maybe just because Alan Cummings on it?
That was my thought.
That's
I do enjoy
that. That's the one reason wanted to watch that. I'm like, ooh, Alan Cummings.
Yeah, me too.
And then one that my boys love to sing the theme song to, well, a theme song they made up, Mad Men. And I've only seen the first season of Mad Men.
We're so far behind on Mad Men, but we love it.
I
saw
it.
The first three episodes. And then
I enjoy the thought of Mad Men.
The idea of Mad Men is great.
Well, AMC, they have really four shows on right now. Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, and The Killing. Which The Killing and Walking Dead
pretty good
are both,
foursome.
I couldn't get into The Killing.
Well, The Killing was okay, and
it rained too much.
And well,
how dare they have a TV show where it rains
in Seattle? How dare they?
It was too much rain.
But both Walking Dead and Breaking Bad here are absolutely amazing, and it was just one of those. I never got it. I didn't get in right at the beginning, and I'm the type of person that I need to watch it from the beginning.
Yeah.
And even if it's not a show that is, you need to watch from the beginning, I have issues with that. So I just haven't had time to go back and catch up.
Durwood's pick, Boardwalk Empire. That's probably going to take it.
I don't necessarily think
it may be the best show out of them, but I think that's the one that's going to win.
I think it will probably take it out of those, but I'm hoping for Game of Thrones. Because it's an awesome show.
Keep hoping.
Whatever. Comedy series, which is important to us because we love comedy. Big Bang Theory, which
Yay!
I love.
I'm happy to see it get nominated.
Excellent show. Glee, which I love, but I don't think this was the best season.
For me,
This wasn't a season that should have got nominated.
Thank you, Derwin.
You're welcome.
Definitely not the stronger season that season one was.
Season
it was inconsistent.
Was really good.
Yeah. Note to Glee, please stop doing original songs.
Thank you.
Please.
Stay in your lane.
Please
stay
stop doing
in your
original
lane.
Songs.
We like seeing you do covers.
Yeah, that's
love seeing
show.
You do covers. Original songs,
okay.
You have singers. We don't need auto-tune. I don't need to hear all of them in auto-tune.
Well, I have a theory as to why they do that.
And I will say, though, if you are going to do original songs, you have the ability probably to get people probably Alan Menken.
Yeah.
maybe some, your Broadway, you deal with, theatrical stuff. Get Broadway songwriters to write your goddamn motherfucking songs.
The other thing with Glee is I think they should go back to playing some songs that are a little older and not right now on the charts, because some of them I'd never heard
before. That actually ties into my auto-tune theory.
Yeah, Friday? They did Friday?
Because,
they did.
And it took me a minute to recognize that one, but here's what it is that when they make the show, they understand that these songs are not only meant to be performed, they're meant to be sold. And they understand also that a big chunk of their demographic is young people. And young people want to hear now. They want to hear contemporary. And as much as I hate it, that's a part of music now. And the other reason is with a lot of songs they do, like Kesha's TikTok, like the Katy Perry songs that they do, they want to replicate the sound of that original song. And in order to do that, certainly with TikTok, you have to have auto-tune.
I think they are stronger when they reimagine a song, Dancing With Myself, that they did in the first season.
Yeah.
Right. They completely redid that song. I thought it was brilliant, and it really brought it up for modern audiences. I wish they would do more of that.
The thing with Friday is, at first when I heard they were doing that, I'm like, oh, dear God. But, then realizing a big part of their demographic is high school kids. Mm-hmm. And they themselves are supposed to be high school kids, and
they would pick that.
It's something that would play, us being older, we're like, oh dear God, this is a travesty on the ears and on the human race. Whereas for a high schooler, it's like, yay!
Well, I am just glad that whether they did it on Glee or not, that somebody finally decided to come forward and address the problem that teens face of where to sit in the car.
Yes.
I am tired of the silence. I am tired of pretending it just doesn't exist. This is an issue that has been swept under the rug since teenagers have come into existence. That is nearly 40 years, ladies and gentlemen. And I am glad that Rebecca Black had the gumption and the determination to come forward and say, you know what? Enough. The world needs to know if we're going to sit in the front or if we're going to sit in the back.
Wasn't that also, like, wasn't there a big controversial cut scene from American Graffiti dealing with that exact issue?
Exactly. They wanted to hush it. I think it was the government. But anyway, what's the next nominee?
Wow. My personal favorite, and it's so hard because I love The Big Bang Theory, but I also love Modern Family.
Yeah, that's
for my money, the best comedy on television.
I think it's the best cast on television is Modern Family. I think they are all genius.
I think we may have a contender for best sitcom of all time. I know it's early in the game. But with what they do in the genre of sitcom, because they have perfected the genre of sitcom.
Oh, it's
and
classic.
It's
you
so
know
modern.
What's coming, and yet it is still.
And you still want it, and it's still perfect. Hilarious. Yeah. What they do so well.
Ed O'Neill just leads that cast beautifully. Oh. Actually, we probably won't have time to get into all of them, but all the adults are nominated.
As well, they should be.
Yeah, all of them.
God damn it.
The kid should be nominated.
Yeah.
The kid that plays Manny.
Oh, my Lord.
Is
get
so
that
good.
Kid an Emmy nom, please.
Yeah, but the entire cast.
He was like
nominated.
GQ as one of the best dressed people on television.
And again, Sofia Vergara, best hits on TV.
Agreed. Close second, Christina Hendricks.
Close second.
The other one, I'm not The Office. I've never watched
The Office.
It's
a sentimental vote, and Watch Out is going to take a lot of votes away from other shows that deserve them.
And although I will say this season was better than in the past, and I will say Steve Carell's last episode was probably the best way for him to leave. He had probably the best line in years. Because basically the premise of the show, it's like basically it's a documentary being filmed of them, you know, seven years later. And as he's at the airport, as he's taking off the mic, you know, to give to back to the documentary crew, he's like, so will you guys tell me when this is going to air? And then he hands it off. And then there was a great scene because the way he planned it was that he told everyone the next day was his last day, but he didn't want to say goodbye to everyone. So that was his last day. And Jim had found it out and was basically, you know, they had a touching scene in the office, but then basically his own way of saying goodbye to everyone without them knowing it. But Pam was out running errands and stuff because she's like the office manager sort of thing, and he didn't get a chance. And then she runs up as he like runs past security after he has a microphone off, and you can't like, and they have this nice little scene just inside past security in the airport where you don't hear a single word said by them, and it was
actually quite touching.
Yeah, it was well done.
The last two, Parks and Recreations and 30 Rock.
Yeah. Okay, NBC is gonna split a lot of those votes.
Just
number one, Parks and Rec probably had the best season they've had in their entire run.
Does that
That's
really
a show.
Say a lot though?
Well,
no, I've heard
because it's a lot like 30 Rock. It started off weak, but it's steadily improved as it's gone along, and it's actually improved by leaps and bounds. The show actually started off as unwatchable. It's now
like the second or third episode.
It's now I've gotten back to it, and it's actually now quite entertaining. The cast has really come together. 30 Rock is a model of consistency. However, with the competition that you have going on, number one, you have three of those NBC sitcoms going against each other. Then you've got Big Bang Theory, which is one of those where it's just like, let's give them the nomination and let them know we're acknowledging
that'll
them because they're good.
Yeah,
exactly. It's probably going to go to Modern Family because
honestly,
out of those, it's the best one.
Like,
but
I love
I'm just
Rock,
saying,
but
be careful of The Office. Like I said, Steve Carell's last show and all, and the way they ended their season, it could really show strongly. But my pick is still Modern Family.
Yeah, I think Modern Family. I mean, and I love 30 Rock, and it's just a very consistent, funny, and I love
it. I started watching it.
I love a lot of the stuff that they do, and it's, I mean, I love Tina Fey, but I think also that's the thing. It's just very consistently good. But yeah, I think Modern Family is.
reality shows. The Amazing Race.
It wins every year. Let's just move on. It's going to be amazing.
No, it won last year.
What won last year?
Top Chef won last year.
Is it nominated this year?
Wow,
Top Chef won?
Yeah.
It did. I was very happy.
It was a huge thing because since they put that category into effect, the only show that's ever won was The Amazing Race. Which, I used to watch The Amazing Race, but now it competes with too many other shows I watch.
Amazing Race is boring now.
I actually liked it at the time.
No, when it came out, it was awesome, and I loved watching it, but now it's just boring. It's like, we get it.
I just wish Phil would pick an accent and go with it.
Mm. American Idol, which I thought they had a shitty season.
They did.
But that's not for this season, that's for last season.
Which, for...
Is that the one where Bauer Sox didn't win?
Yeah.
That was shitty, too.
It was.
Dancing with the Stars, which I do not watch.
I don't watch it either.
I do.
I admit it. I love dance. I love So You Think You Can Dance, and a lot of the dancers from that show are now on Dancing with the Stars.
Chelsea Hightower's
exactly, and Dimitri is on there, I watch it for them.
One of the choreographers, what's his face?
Shabadoo.
And it doesn't take itself seriously. It's hysterical, and the hosts are funny. Tom Bergeron is hysterical, and it's light and fluffy and silly, and they know it.
You heard it here, folks. Somebody said Tom Bergeron is funny.
He is.
I actually saw my first episode of Dancing with the Stars, and I thought it was really cool and very versatile because they actually had a bullfighter on the stage, and then I realized that was Kirstie Alley. Two shows on Sunday. Thank you. Good
night. Damn it, Anthony.
That's the one show I will do. I accept Sparkle on that show.
Project Runway is up.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They
had a really good season last year.
Always watch it.
Yeah.
Always.
Well, how can you not watch The Gun?
Tim Gunn.
Did anybody not cry during Mondo's episode?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And then he was positive.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was... Yeah.
But
Andre.
Tim Gunn, I want you to be my stepfather.
Tim Gunn is the man. He is the man.
And myth and legend.
I would love to bring him to the black and white ball.
No. Yes. No. Absolutely not.
But the boy is scared that he would look down on him.
I would fall before him and beg for forgiveness before he said a word. I'm like, I'm sorry, Mr. Gunn. I didn't make it work.
I think Tim Gunn would realize that we are just mortal people and that we are...
You weren't forgiven, Anthony.
Exactly. Yes.
I would love to go to a nice cafe with Tim Gunn.
He's so elegant.
And have tea and little sandwiches with him.
I'd like to take him to bars and pick up chicks.
You know what? He would probably be the best wingman.
He'd be a good wingman. He'd be the best wingman ever.
Because probably women would come over wanting to talk to Tim Gunn.
Exactly.
And I would.
Well, here's my friend Durwood.
He's an excellent dresser.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you know before we left, he'd make sure I was looking right.
Well, yeah. He wouldn't go out with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love when we go off on tangents about imaginary friendships with celebrities. A couple of weeks ago, it was dinner with Michelle Obama, and now it's picking up chicks in a bar with Tim Gunn.
Because you know you could.
I want to start that reality show.
I love our
picking
imaginary
up chicks
life.
In a bar with Tim Gunn.
That'd be way better.
Lifetime, make this happen.
That'd be way better.
I'm sure the title Picking Up Chicks on Lifetime is going to go over
that
real well.
That Santino and Austin show was funny.
They
made dresses for hillbillies. It was awesome. So You Think You Can Dance is nominated, of course.
Oh, okay.
As it should be.
Yep. And Top Chef, which I love.
I love Top Chef.
Top Chef.
My pick, So You Think You Can Dance, I think it's going to surprise people. You heard it here.
Could be a clean sweep if Dealey gets hurt.
I would love for that to happen, but Top Chef had a really good
season. Well, seeing as
season.
They got, I don't know if you're going to get it, but they got 4 of the 5 choreography nominations.
Yes, and it's not on here, but they did, and I was very happy to see that. Although I was kind of surprised at some of the Mandy Moore ones.
They did it as body of work.
Some of her stuff.
Oh, they didn't submit individual pieces?
No, it was
not this time.
Yeah, it was. Well, it wasn't their all of their work. Yeah. It was. I think each of them had Travis only had two, but
2 to 4.
But one of the ones that was nominated for Mandy Moore was the one she did to Boogie Shoes. That was a terrible piece of choreography. And it was like, seriously.
I just want Travis Wall to win so Nigel will shut up every week about talking.
Yeah,
about,
that's my least favorite part of the show when they keep saying like. This will be an Emmy-nominated... It's like, shut the fuck up.
Stop calling your shots.
Since we're running a little short on time, I will tell you some of the things that I was... Because I love the Emmys. I love award shows. It's one of my favorite things on Earth. But one of my favorite shows that I was so glad to see got so many nominations was Justified, which is on FX. If you don't watch Justified, you should. Timothy Olyphant is awesome on that show.
FX is actually an underrated network. You should be watching a lot of stuff they have.
Timothy Olyphant, one of my favorite Comic-Con moments ever. back before Hall H, it was Ballroom 20, it was for Dreamcatcher and the Stephen King movie. And there were two people there. Timothy Olyphant. This is before, like, he hit a lot of bigger movies. Right. And,
before that Gone in 60 Seconds fame. Oh, wait, that was Nicky Cat. Sorry. Yeah.
And he was in Go. But and
awesome movie.
Yeah, and Jason Lee. This is, like, you know, 2002 maybe, 2001. So Jason Lee at Comic-Con from all the Kevin Smith movies, like, he is revered there as a god. And so basically during the Q&A, everyone was asking Jason Lee questions.
Yeah.
Nothing for Timothy Olyphant. He was sitting there. And one person then gets up and says, I have a question for Timothy Olyphant. And he's like, thank you. Finally. Thank you. What's your question? What was it like working with Jason Lee?
That is amazing.
Oh my God. Like, it looked like he was like, I don't.
Now, let me ask you, was that a legitimate question or were they trying to be funny? Because either way, it was amazing.
I can't remember. I want to say it was like some 15-year-old girl or something. So it was like, it could have been either, but it was hilarious.
That's pretty awesome. But if you don't watch Justified, you really should. Elmore Leonard, who does amazing books. He also did, what's the one with George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez?
Out of Sight.
Out of Sight. He wrote those.
Jackie Brown wasn't one.
Uh-huh. Jackie Brown was one based on his novels. This show is based on a short story he wrote. And they kind of built the show off of this short story. It is an amazing show.
Wait, Elmore Leonard, didn't he start Scientology?
No, that's L. Ron Hubbard. You're thinking of the youngest kid on the Jetsons.
No, that's Elroy Jetson.
Oh, okay. Now, you were thinking of the guy who was in Jaws.
No, that's...
Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
There's anyway. Wrong with all of you. Okay, so yeah, but I'm very happy to see Justified get a little love, because Sons of Anarchy didn't, and that always pisses me off, because Sons of Anarchy is an amazing show on FX as well. Yeah. So okay. That was upsetting.
Well, I think in wrapping things up, the lesson that I've learned today...
We forgot one, though. A show that we love.
What's that?
Raising Hope.
Oh.
Martha Plimpton got nominated for
and
Best Actress.
I was, okay, look, I was just watching Parenthood the other day. Parenthood came out, what, like 90, 91, something 89, like that? 89. Yeah. Martha Plimpton has not aged since Parenthood.
No. And what I love that is that crazy. She's playing a grandma.
Yeah, she plays a grandma on the
unreal.
Show.
You look good, Martha Plimpton. Anyway.
Raising Hope is a fantastic show, but that begs the question, because we got to touch on this for just a second, of the guest star with Cloris Leachman.
Because she's in every episode.
Yeah.
But she is in none of the credits.
She's in the end of the credits as a guest star.
As a guest star. She's always listed as a guest star.
Well, you know, Heather Locklear was a guest star for like 4 seasons on Melrose Place.
Yeah.
Oh, and she got nominated how many times?
A bunch.
Yeah.
Really?
A bunch. Like 20. I'm kidding.
She got nominated 4 times every year.
She got nominated for sound design. It was awesome. Anyway.
But Cloris Leachman is actually really funny on Raising Hope.
Is she not good in?
Yeah.
She was money on the Facts of Life.
Seen her in shit, and she is brilliant.
Excellent.
She should probably change her diaper if that's the case.
Oh, Jesus.
But anyway.
Seriously?
So to wrap up, if you think Amy Berner sounds sexy, you should read her in print at Smart Pop Books. And Comic-Con is awesome, and nobody got stabbed, and it was a big love fest. The movies were weak sauce, but the TV brought it like, whoa. And then we all talked about Amy Winehouse, and she's dead, and it's really sad, and we didn't have any good jokes, because, you know, let's just take a moment to mourn. And we talked about the Primetime Emmy nominations, and how awesome Cat Deeley is, and how disappointing this season of Glee was, and how, you know, all the reality shows really kind of are awesome, and it shouldn't go to The Amazing Race, and Boardwalk Empire is going to win, and for some reason, Durwood felt the need to give all his picks now in July, and we'll see how much they change going into September. But I think the one major thing that we learned from all of this is how important it was that Rebecca Black made the song Friday.
Has anyone heard her follow-up single?
Is it Saturday?
Don't ever.
Oh, it's actually called February.
Mm.
And, you know, March is after, and then April. January was
okay, spoilers, dude, yeah. Spoilers.
I'm going to stop you
If
right
you liked
there.
What you heard here, you can get your fix of pop culture every day by following us on Twitter, at Pop Culture House. You can find me, Anthony Donovan, at Daboy, D-A-B-O-Y.
I'm at Crazed Dr. Scott.
Durwood's at Regis Swing.
I'm at Amy Berner, B-E-R-N-E-R. Really easy there.
All right, and once again for Smart Pop?
SmartPopBooks.com, or you can visit them on Twitter or Facebook.
So yeah, or you can shoot us an email.
At thehouseofpopculture@gmail.com.
And we want to thank everybody here at Don't Panic Studios and sound engineer Joey. We love you.
Woo!
Mm.
So that's going to do it for this installment, and we'll see you next time.
Later.
Amy Berner is beautiful.
Thank you.
Tim Gunn should call us.
Oh my.